Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Miss Paralegal. I would like to take this time to tell you about a program on Blog Talk Radio, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, every Thursday night from 8 to 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, 7 to 8:30 Central Standard Time, and 5 to 6:30 Pacific. Let's talk about the community concerns and political strengths. Among so many other topics and issues, bring your concerns and questions to the table in a talk with Ice and Friends every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com. Listen, any concerns or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the host, sponsor of Blog Talk Radio. This message was approved by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
Good evening. Welcome to The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, heard Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 until 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 8 until 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We always like to offer this brief disclaimer in the beginning of the show. Any comments and or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or opinions of the host, Good evening. Welcome to The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, heard Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 until 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 8 until 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We always like to offer this brief disclaimer in the beginning of the show. Any comments and or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or opinions of the hosts, sponsors, or Blog Talk Radio. Our brief description of the show is, this show addresses community concerns in regard to designing ways members in communities can increase their abilities to acquire more income. In addition to that, methods to address increasing political strength and impact will also be featured. Financial enhancement, increasing political strength and impact, improving possibilities for combining efforts with others who have similar interests, all of these and more poignant concerns will be approached in an entertaining format. There will be musical segments, interesting guests, as well as questions and comments from our listening audience. If you have any interest in improving situations for our youth, such as STEM and incarceration estimates for minority members of this society or any members for this society, reassessing the significance of spiritual impact, investigating the best possible means of boosting knowledge for improving your health, as well as many pertinent topics too numerous to include in this introduction, just join us as we seek truth on The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Call us at 347-945-7040. That's 347-945-7040. Or you can email us at blakicz.1@gmail.com. Email at blakicz.1@gmail.com. We highly recommend that you consult professionals in the fields we refer to on this show. The information you hear on this show is meant to be a catalyst to encourage individuals to research topics that they find interesting.
Hey, I want to thank you and welcome to The Next Phase with Ice and Friends right here on Blog Talk Radio. Always, every Thursday, we try to mention our dear sister, Ms. Rabia Ahmed, and she is the organizer of SMART, a program in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, designed to assist especially women and their families who have had difficulties in their lives. The program actually aids the women and their families to regain their social and financial footing. Sister Rabia does considerably more than just talk. Thank you for sharing with us, Sister Rabia, and you're welcome to call through at any time. You know that. If you want to find out more information about Sister Rabia Ahmed and SMART, Smart Mothers Are Really Trying, you can look her up at www.smart2change.org. www.smart2change.org. And we applaud her and all her efforts there in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, in addressing some serious concerns for women in that community. I think she could serve as well as, I'm sure she's been influenced by others, to be a model for some other communities around the United States and the world. And I want to mention, I got a chance to listen in to Sister India Declare today, and she's going to be on what you call on demand for the next, up until I think April the 4th. And I love her show, and so you can really catch some good stuff if you even give a listen to her on demand shows. And those will be heard 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, Monday through Saturday, I believe. And that'll be at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard. And she does have the Real Raw right now. She's taking a brief break, well deserved. Right, and so you might please give her a listen. That's INDIADECLAIR, India Declare, heard on Blog Talk Radio. Also, Sister Navazor, NAVAXOR1, heard Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That would be 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. And she'll be on, and if you go to Blog Talk Radio, look in the search bar, type in NAVAXOR1, NAVAXOR1, and you'll find information about her and her show. Miss Janice Graham, Our Common Ground. And I don't have the specifics on her show, but if you'll please just go to Blog Talk Radio, type in JANICEGRAHAM, Janice Graham, and that will search bar will take you to the information necessary to find her show. She has a network and a series of shows. All those shows are entertaining and enlightening and inspiring, so I think I would highly recommend that you take a listen to them. Also, Miss Quiet Storm, I hadn't heard her in a good bit, but I hope to get a chance to give her a listen to somewhere in the real near future. MSQUIETSTORM, all one word, Miss Quiet Storm. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you can look her up on the internet, www.MSQUIETSTORM, MissQuietStorm.com, and it'll give you all the relevant and pertinent information about her show, a wonderfully interesting, entertaining, and informative show. And she's heard on Saturdays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Mountain, and 11 a.m. Central, 12 noon Eastern. And give her some consideration as well. Wonderful information on her show, Miss Quiet Storm. And Brother Alpho. Brother Alpho's hours have changed, and I haven't been able to keep up with him, but I'm sure that I every time I have to beg him for the information if I see him, so I'll be looking forward to getting some information out to you about him. But the main thing you can do is come to Blog Talk Radio. Look in the search block for ALFO, Alpho, and he has a very entertaining, and he's very well-informed, has a tremendous amount of information to share with you. Now, I'd like to mention about current TV. If you ever wondered whatever happened to Keith Olbermann, Keith, O-L-B-E-R-M-A-N, one of the more dynamic national media personalities, he went to Current, C-U-R-R-E-N-T, Current TV. And you can follow him there. He's always been inspirational as far as I'm concerned, because he provides you with a tremendous amount of information. Very energetic and enthusiastic host. Really like his shows. Now, to continue on with some of my disclaimers, one of my goals in 2011 is to provide more opinions from Americans of African descent, the African ethnic perspective, should I say. Because my opinion is that opinions from African ethnic origins have a tremendous value in these These opinions are absolutely necessary and fundamental in the public discourse. Some people would sarcastically retort, why? I wonder who they might be. My response simply is, what exactly is an alternative to the opinions from people of African origins? Precisely, as I suspected, there is no legitimate opposing view. The only defense is tradition or custom, either of which can be found to be totally devoid of substance. Another 2011 goal is to continue to stay informed and abreast and to be abreast of information that is relevant to me, spiritually, personally, ethnically, economically, professionally, and nationally, politically, environmentally, etc. And tell you what, we'll be right back. I want to take a look at some thoughts that I had about some of the occurrences in Northern Africa and whether or not they have some relevance here in the United States. My son and his group, called the Sidewalk Coalition, I believe I'm right on that, Crosswalk Coalition, they do some music, and it's a Christian-type rap thing, and I want you to take a listen to them, and I'll get some more information if you like it, and we'll provide that information for you. And I want to say happy birthday to my son out there in Cali. Here's some of their music.
My breath is running out, but I don't care. I'm flexing out my hair, but I don't care. 'Cause God's up in here, it's my all that I give. He's the reason I live. He gives me all my breath. I give my praises to you. Without you, what would I do? I thank for all that you are. Hallelujah.
Send the angels through the door, praise. This is time to dance.
Crosswalk Coalition, my son's group out in LA, or he's a member of it. I'm not sure how the hierarchy works in that particular group, but I want to congratulate him and the group and the efforts of the group for the things that they're doing, trying to keep young ones interested in something that's more positive and geared toward hopefully more success for themselves and hopefully steering them away from being caught up in some of the problems that exist out here in this world today. Been noticing some things down in Miami as far as seven people of African descent, seven black young men shot by the police department, and I understand I'll be getting more into this in the future, but tonight I was going to dedicate it primarily to the situations that are occurring in Libya. But you know, to my idea, we address these issues nationally in regard to situations where that the police are involved with doing some dastardly deeds to some of the black individuals in our communities. And people, I think the community at large doesn't realize that if you ever condone or if you're ever complicit with the abuse of any particular group, you don't condone the abuse of the group. You condone the behavior. And, you know, people may think, oh, you're harsh on the police. And I'm not harsh on police. I'm harsh on those police. A uniform doesn't change your behavior pattern, doesn't change your mental structure, doesn't change your belief system. All it does is change your appearance. So there are policemen who are terrible, pitiful, and pathetic individuals. They exist in their environment just as do those type of individuals exist in any environment. So don't think I'm trying to cast aspersions on all policemen. I'm just saying that there are those individuals who hide behind the badges to carry out their sad and demented tasks, whatever they may have conceived them to be. And it's a sad shame that those individuals have had to suffer the victims of their demented behavior patterns and the families of those individuals. And I wish I knew how to contact anybody that had any involvement with some of those, adversely involved with some of those police situations. But anyway, we'll be looking forward to trying to bring you some more information on some issues like that into the future. But right now, taking a look at what's going on in the Middle East, I wrote up a little deal here, and I hope it makes sense to you. You know, I'm not a writer. I just do what I do. Anyway, it says, starts off, I have a question for you. Do you see any situation in United States of America history that resembles anything going on in Libya today? Question. Do you see any situation in the USA history that resembles anything going on in Libya today? Maybe. Maybe not. Well, to me, I see a surreal reminder of at least two monumental events in the history of this nation. One event was a Revolutionary War, where a ragtag band of rebels sought to rid themselves of the constraints of a monarchical rule. As the monarchy sought to extort financial resources from the subjects in the new land in North America, later to become the United States of America, well, the individuals who were commonly referred to as loyal subjects soon were inspired in a tremendous yearning for freedom to engage in a revolt. That decision led to the military struggle that would eventually allow this country to become formed. From my limited knowledge, the revolt would not have been possible were it not for the assistance from some other countries who saw a will exhibited in these former subjects of kings and queens that was uncompromising and irresistible and irrepressible. The motivation for freedom from this previous royal their previous royal dominators was unrequited and hence led to the Revolutionary War, which eventually led to the formation of the United States of America and the creation of one of the most inspirational documents ever in history, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights of the United States of America. So as I see it, there is a certain population in Libya who have grown weary of dictatorial rule and choose not to continue being the abused subjects of a dictator, and they seek assistance to free themselves. That perhaps is the feeling that resonates in the minds and hearts of so many American citizens. There is a certain similarity to the recent events in the state of Wisconsin. By that, I mean the citizens are rejecting the rule of a dictatorial type of gubernatorial administration that seeks to ignore the voices of the citizenry. We have a nonviolent means to redress issues in the United States. However, there are many countries who do not have that option. Another instance I'm reminded of is the Civil War. In that historical event, the rebels, or the Confederacy, sought to control the lives of citizens of the United States by enslaving them and reaping the benefits of their services without any compensation. The concept of Confederacy was in total opposition to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States of America. As a result of the error in judgment of the Confederate states, they fired on the Union. UNON, the Union, the United States of America. Not only were they defeated, their concept of color superiority was rendered a fallacy and incompetent conclusion formed on a collection of errant ideologies. Actually, the Confederates committed treason, the act for which should have ended in the full application of the law enacted on the Confederates. However, they were allowed to maintain control of the land and resources and should have relinquished without argument. The eventual agreements actually resulted in some degree of plurality in government. Several different concepts are reunited to sustain integrity of the Union, the United States of America. So we see in Libya today, there is a dictator who was not elected but rose to power and relegated his subjects to the dictatorial rule, which obviously has led to dissension and even revolution. With this leader, will this leader have the humility and to consider a government of plurality, where there is an equal share in government for all, or will this dictator be bound by his egomania? To the extent that a perpetual civil war will consume his nation for the foreseeable future. An even greater question is, what role should the USA play in the evolution of this situation, or should it be silent and stay on the sideline? Other individuals are watching and will soon either feel they have support to take control of their government and allow the populace to rule, or will the control of these other nations remain in the hands of the egomaniacal few? In conclusion, my question is, do we support plurality of government, or do we believe as these Republican governors, Walker, Kasich, Christie, Daniels, Barber, Scott, etc., in egomaniacal, unilateral dictatorial rule? By the way, the very least you could do is to vote. That's just my insight on what's going on over in northern Africa in regard to Muammar Gaddafi. There are some similarities that I saw that were very striking between Muammar Gaddafi and the Republican governors, Walker, Kasich, Christie, Daniel, Barber, Scott, etc. And because Muammar Gaddafi is a dictator and he has unilateral and to a degree, in my opinion, egomaniacal dictatorial rule. As these governors choose to do the same by just using their force, to overrun previously agreed upon laws, regulations, ethics, and moral instances that allowed everyone equal participation in the process of governing not only their states but their nation. And so you can have these governors who side with the likes of Muammar Gaddafi, or you can have citizens who believe in freedom and equality and their opportunity to participate in their own destiny. You know, I was digging around for some information in regard to this issue with Muammar Gaddafi. And I've heard different opinions about it. And what I found in the Loop 21, it says boss status. How Gaddafi became the king of kings in Africa. The Africa Union, the African Union knows how Gaddafi gets down. The U.S. might want to ask them. This is by Webster Brooks, the Loop 21, Wednesday the 3rd, Wednesday, March the 23rd, 2011 at 3:08 p.m. Despite the Obama administration's best efforts, the first black president is having a hard time getting the Africans, better yet the African Union, AU, on board with military actions in Libya. Why? Because Colonel Muammar Gaddafi has been the most dominant force in Africa. Let me repeat that. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi has been the most dominant force in Africa for over 30 years. We keep hearing about how the Arab League is feeling and where everyone else stands on Libya, but we hear little about what the African countries think, an important detail since it's their continent and all. Right now, the coalition of mostly sub-Saharan African states and some of your most notorious dictators has refused to support the United Nations and the Arab League's no-fly zone resolution in Libya. So now bombs dropped on Libya each day look more and more like European and an Arab thing. Recently, Radani Lamamra, the AU Commissioner for Peace and Security, said events in Libya require urgent African action to bring about an end to the hostilities. How did they propose doing that? The AU formed a high-level committee in Libya to hold meetings on March the 19th with Gaddafi and opposition forces to discuss comprehensive reform to defuse the tensions that led to the current crisis. But the committee's plans fell off when airstrikes kicked in shortly thereafter. While in the AU's questioning of a foreign intervention in Libya might be a legitimate matter for debate, their refusal to denounce Gaddafi's attacks on his own people is not. Seriously, did the AU really believe they could broker comprehensive reforms to end Gaddafi's last man standing plan to destroy the rebels? Clearly, the AU is jumping through hoops to avoid condemning Gaddafi's regime. Why? The answer is threefold. First, Gaddafi is a slick dude. He set it up where many countries are financially dependent on him. Second, African states are very well aware of Gaddafi's reputation for exacting revenge against political opponents. You don't want to see him mad. Third, Colonel Muammar is the biggest man on the continent. Because his ouster is not a foregone conclusion, the AU's position won't change anytime soon until he is forced out of power. The AU's ambivalence about throwing Gaddafi to the wolves is largely the untold story of how Gaddafi's attempted to transform the Organization of African Unity, OAU, and AU from an ineffective talking shop of African leaders into a formidable regional organization. Gaddafi emerged as a force on the continent in the 70s when he successfully persuaded 25 African nations to break diplomatic relations with Israel. As a member of the OAU's Liberation Committee, he played a critical role in securing weapons and funding the liberation movement in South Africa, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Angola. You know he's got global game. If Nelson Mandela visits Tripoli and praises Gaddafi as one of the revolutionary icons of our time. Soon after, in lining pockets along the way, Gaddafi was unpacking his vision of moving the AU toward the United States of America with one government, a Pan-American parliament, a single monetary system, and a standard continental army, his very own black empire. By 2004, the AU's Pan-African parliament met for the first time and established its new home in Midrand, South Africa. And after a sharp debate between Gaddafi and South African President Thabo Mbeki, the AU reached a compromise agreement to create an African standby force. Those forces are deployed today in Somalia and Darfur. Gaddafi also understands that you put money where your mouth is. Since the AU's creation in 2002, Gaddafi has had a share of in 15% of the organization's annual operating budget. Through direct contributions to the AU and Libya's financial investments in individual member states, Gaddafi's amassed substantial leverage to pursue his political agenda after establishing a $65 billion sovereign wealth fund. Gaddafi launched the Libyan Africa Investment Portfolio. The LAP projects include green networks, a mobile phone operator commercial operations in Niger, Ivory Coast, Uganda, and Rwanda. In Mali, Libya, he built a $100 million government office building in the capital city of Bamako and funded a national television network. Libya is also contributing 100 million euros to construct a Trans-Sahara Highway north of Niger and about 50 million to grant Mauritania to begin construction on a hospital and university named after Gaddafi. The LAP also operates luxury hotel chains in Gambia and the Congo. Gaddafi's role as an investor and a philanthropist for many of West and Sub-Saharan nations was the cornerstone of Libyan soft power in Africa. Irrespective of Gaddafi's efforts to elevate the AU, he has also been in most popularizing element undermining African unity. He attempted to impose his will on Africa through manipulation and bribery, backed by intimidation and force. In 1982, he supported Jerry Rawlings, a successful coup in Ghana, as well as failed coups against standing governments in the Central African Republic, Morocco, Sudan, and Mauritania. He's raised independent armies like the infamous Islamic Legion that was routed by Chad in Darfur and sent his own Libyan forces into Chad and Uganda. Complaints that Gaddafi engaged in destabilization efforts in Benin, Burundi, Kenya, and Ethiopia, among others, were constantly brought up to the AU's attention. In short, Gaddafi, the fount of division and conflict within the AU. Crisis in Libya may have provided the AU with an international statement about the future direction of Africa. How willing is it to rid the continent of dictators and purveyors of genocide? Should Gaddafi be deposed, the African Union may get a second chance. This story was written by Webster Brooks. He serves as an editor of the U.S.-Iran Peace Project. His articles and analysis on Iran, Middle East, and Eurasia appear in newspapers, on websites, and blogs in the United States and internationally. He can be reached by Twitter or Facebook, Webster Brooks. This was a Loop 21-323-2011. A little bit of information about Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. We'll be back with a little bit more, with quite a bit more on the show right after this.
I see no changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a need, bro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get a crack to the kids who the hell cares. One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship them dope, let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother that are two distant strangers. And finesse, I was supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if you're close to me? I let it go back to when we played the kids with things. I wonder what it takes to make this one better place. Let's erase the waste. Take the evil out the people, they'll be acting right. They're both black and white, they smoke crack tonight. And the only time we kill is when we kill each other. It takes skills and we real time to heal each other. And as always, things happen sick. We ain't ready to see a black man thing. It ain't a secret of the field of black. The penitentiary black and it's filled with black. But some things will never change. Another way for the bringing in the dope. Now tell me what's the mother to do. Being real, though, to build to the brother in you. You gotta operate the easy way. Put the maiden in the sleepy way. Sell a crack, sell a key.
Hey, welcome back to the next phase with Ice and Friends, heard right here Thursdays on Blog Talk Radio at 7 until 8:30 p.m. Last week I had got called into work, so I was unable to do my broadcast, and I didn't know until Brother Alpha told me that there was a way that you could cancel your broadcast, so I'm learning as time goes on. Hopefully we'll get more of this information down and be better able to facilitate a more consistent, continuous a show with some continuity to it. Right now, we'd like to give you the number to call if you get a chance, 347-945-7040, 347-945-7040. If you want to contact us by email, please do at blakicz.1@gmail.com, blakicz.1@gmail.com. taking a look at a little bit more information about Northern Africa and what's going on over there. I don't know why this struck my interest this week, but it did. And we'll be looking more into concerns of national and local events as time continues. But one of the things that I was caught by, and this is the same publication, which is the loop21.com, and it is why are black Africans in Libya under attack? Why are black Africans in Libya under attack? Black Africans trapped in North African revolts can't get a break. This is by Nadra Kareem Niddle. This is the Loop, Monday the 3rd, 14th, 2011, 7:24 a.m. is the dateline. It says, it's no secret that life in Libya is downright hellish at the moment. As civil war engulfs the North African nation, food, shelter, and health care are hard to come by. And if there weren't enough, if that weren't enough, black immigrant workers in Libya can't count on rebels lashing out at them, thanks to rumors that dictator Muammar Gaddafi is using sub-Saharan African mercenaries to do his bidding. Think things couldn't be any worse for blacks in Libya? Think again. The irony of a black man-led Obama administration, NATO, and other allies fretting over how to help bombed rebels who are bashing black Africans is not lost. Those blacks stuck in Libya with a good luck and wherewithal to make it to the Tunisian border often stop from crossing over by bigoted Arab Tunisian authorities. So how did blacks in Libya wind up in such dire straits? Ignorance, racism, and Gaddafi himself play equal parts. Fact versus fiction. Since the anti-Gaddafi uprising began in Libya on February the 16th, rebels have terrorized hundreds of black migrant workers, not only robbing, beating, and detaining them, but also subjecting them to strip searches. The rumor that Gaddafi hired Africans from other countries to crush the rebellion may be nothing more than gossip, though. Gaddafi may have black henchmen in his crew, but they're not necessarily foreigners, as Naeem Jinnah of South Africa's Afro-Middle East Center told the Christian Science Monitor. Gaddafi's bodyguards, many of those people, are actually from the south of Libya, partly because Gaddafi trusts them more than he would trust people from the north for various tribal and other reasons. Given this, the abuses of dark-skinned people in Libya can't simply be chalked up to garden variety racism. This isn't to say that Libya was a picnic for blacks before the revolution. After all, attacks on black migrant workers there have intermittently made headlines over the years. During the current uprising, however, northern Libyans appear to be lashing out at blacks because Gaddafi has long sought the loyalty of dark-skinned Libyans in the south, not to mention that of leaders in nearby sub-Saharan nations. In a nutshell, Gaddafi's love affair with Pan-Africans has turned those with dark skin into enemies, into the enemy during his so-called revolution. There have been reports, though, that the rebels aren't branding any black Africans they see as the opposition. Ibrahim Zakaria serves as case in point. Zakaria, who was Ghanaian, told the Christian Science Monitor how he and a fellow Ghanaian paid for a car ride to the Egyptian border to escape war-torn Libya. Two immigrants from Chad joined them on the trip, which came to a halt when rebels stopped them at a roadblock. While the rebels let Zakaria and his friends keep traveling to the border, they unloaded the Chadians from the vehicle. Why? Because Gaddafi reportedly spent tons of cash trying to buy Chad's leader during his decades of rule. He made no such move with Ghana's leaders, likely because of the country's distance from Libya. Interesting information to me. According to the rebels, viewed the Ghanaians in the car as neutral and their Chadian companions as pro-Gaddafi. Does Tunisia have a race problem? Those black Africans fortunate enough to reach the Tunisian border may not have actually crossed it. Last week, Canada's Globe and Mali reported that Tunisian officials had systematically denied entry to blacks. Ghanaian construction workers Aboun Mabi told the newspaper that Tunisian officials call out country by country, Bangladesh, Egypt, China, but they don't call out any African country. They tell us they do not want any blacks to come here. It doesn't stop there. Reps of Human Rights Watch witnessed men beating two black Africans who tried to free Libya by jumping onto a departing Tunisian ship. The good news, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, is that Tunisian authorities have been more gracious to sub-Saharan Africans at the border over the past few days. But that's been since a spokesman called them out during a recent press conference. Many of the 1,800 migrants who crossed to the Tunisian border on March the 4th hail from black Africa. Now for the bad news. The UHCR, which is United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, UHCR, is concerned that fewer than 2,000 migrants are crossing into Tunisia daily at this time, when as many as 10,000 to 15,000 were a week ago. The drop in border crosses may mean that the pro-Gaddafi forces guarding the Libyan side of the border are stopping migrants from fleeing. But Gaddafi's men aren't the only problem. Human Rights Watch suspects that many sub-Saharan Africans remain holed up in Libya because they fear being killed if they venture outdoors. Black African women and children are most likely to be in hiding. Rescue mission. What can be done to help black Africans in Libya? The public can donate to the UN Refugee Agency to help provide emergency relief, and Human Rights Watch urges the United States and European nations to help send black migrants to their native countries because mounting complex and potentially expensive evacuation for their people is probably beyond the capacity of many African countries. So I wonder, what are they to do? They're stuck. President Obama and the European Union seem prepared to answer the call. Obama is pondering military intervention to curb the violence and has authorized the use of civilian aircraft to take migrants in Libya home. The United States is also helping international relief groups evacuate migrants. For its part, the European Union has set aside nearly $42 million for the refugees crisis in Libya on Libya's borders. As of March the 7th, about 140,000 people had crossed the Tunisian border from Libya, and another 87,000 had crossed the Egyptian border. There, more than 5,000 are stranded. And what do the bulk of migrants stuck on the border call home? Sub-Saharan Africa. And this story was written by Nedra Karim Nittle. She's a Los Angeles-based writer and editor. Her work appears in the Los Angeles Times, Racialicious.com, About.com, and other media outlets. This is just information that might or might not be relevant in forming decisions about the ongoings in Libya. And are those ongoing situations relevant to us here in the U.S.? Possibly. Because, after all, you know, if we, whatever the issues are, there are only a few tools that we have. And one of them, got conned into not utilizing the last election was the vote. You know, some of the progressives were a little bit aggravated and upset with the performance of President Obama, the progressives and the liberals. I'm just a plain Democrat. I don't have a hyphen, nothing. I'm just a plain Democrat. A lot of people don't like Democrats. I understand. But that's just the way I roll. And you know, I'm 100%, this is a 100% Obama zone. That's what I do. I support the President of the United States, this particular President of the United States, and I don't think that he should be saddled uniquely with the decisions of the dominant voting majority over the last 43 presidential terms. I mean, this guy's 46, 47 years old, got elected, and he's people expecting him, as they were saying about Bush today in his invasion of Iraq and how they wasn't doing this, and they, you know, Rumsfeld and all these different other Republicans, well, just give it a chance. It's going to work. Just give it a chance. And that was 3 years later after the invasion of Iraq. And then at 2 weeks or a week after this situation, a humanitarian affair goes on in Libya. Well, Obama's not, you know. It's very unfair. But if you don't have any alternative media, then you're relegated to a preponderance of individuals who do not necessarily have President Obama's best interest at heart. But anyway, let's keep looking here. I have some other things that I'd like to discuss with you. And one of the things that I'd like to discuss with you, a brief aside, is the situation with basketball. I caught this article in Yahoo, and I don't know if you saw it. I'm sure probably if you go to Yahoo, I use that as one of my many sources, or several sources, not many, you know, but one of my several sources of information, and you know, it's been a reasonably decent service. They have a bias, in my opinion, and I don't necessarily subscribe to their bias, but I always try my best to take any information available and run it through my own filters, and then I can come out with something that is reasonably satisfactory to me to form an opinion about. But this happens to be talking about March Madness economics, where the money goes. And really, one of the primary concerns for me about March Madness, and remember, I haven't forgotten what's going on in Wisconsin, and I'll never. Hello, guest 12512 in the room there. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate you. And let me say, I appreciate anyone who listens to me archived, because we do have archive shows. And again, I'm sorry that I didn't make it in last week, and I hope you accept my most humble apology. But we'll do our best to be more consistent. But a man has to make a living. That's just one thing about it. I gotta work. I'm too ugly to pimp to them to hustle. I'm too scared to steal. All I know how to do is work. Sell my hours for money. And I, you know, you can only hope to get a fair remuneration for your efforts, right? But anyway, I'm taking a look at this information: March Madness economics, where the money goes. And I think you'll see this. You know, the HCBUs historically. HBCUs, Historical Black Colleges and Universities, they really suffered. They've been picked clean of some of the most prolific and prominent and dominant athletes, although there are athletes who come from every ethnic background and every religious and every other aspect of society. And that's the one thing that we, you know, we've always had the had to look at. And I was, you know, some of the other ethnic groups who were in the quote-unquote dominant voting majority may not have had to look at things the same way we have. So we have a unique perspective that I think is very worth, I'm talking about us of African descent, we have a very unique perspective. And I think that people should give us take a listen to what we have to say, some of us. Some of us. But anyway, talking about March Madness economics, where the money goes, and this is by Investopedia staff, March 22nd, 4:37 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And this is, I got this from Yahoo. This is Rivals.com on Yahoo here. The opening weekend of March Madness is over, and we've seen it all already. Familiar faces, traditional powerhouse steam rolling their early competition, David's beating Elias, last second buzzer beaters, and Gus Johnson losing his mind, whatever else is new. While many consider the annual NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament to be one of the greatest tournaments in sports, There's more to the madness than just the teams battling for their place in the Final Four. Like all great sporting events, the tournament has its share of economic impacts on a variety of levels. Here are just a few of the places the dollars come and go during these three amazing weeks every March. In a dramatic shift from the years of CBS controlling the airwaves during the tournament and deciding which games the viewers were able to watch this year, TV rights will be split in a landmark deal between longtime rights holders CBS and Time Warner's Turner. The two television competitors will split the rights for the next 14 years. Guess how much the total cost is? The total cost of 14 years of collegiate basketball when a guy gets reprimanded for selling a jersey, a measly jersey, because his prowess on the court in college doesn't necessarily translate into financial income for him or his family, no matter what social status they were in. But anyway, the total cost of the television rights is in the neighborhood of $10.8 billion. That's a little bit more than a jersey cost. These guys, their athletic prowess brings in about $10.8 billion over the next 14 years. Along with this steep price tag comes the revenues from broadcasting the tournament, both on television and via other media outlets. Last year, CBS is estimated to have raked in about $620 million from TV advertisements alone, while revenues from non-traditional sources were up about 20%. Even with more and more people watching their favorite television shows in non-traditional ways, sporting events have still managed to keep live viewership growing. And there is nothing quite like the nail-biting thrills of a last-second jumper. The schools, as highlighted in a recent article in Forbes, the NCAA pays out the revenues it receives from its television rights deals, the aforementioned $10.8 billion, to schools, dependent upon their performances in the NCAA tournament over a six-year rolling span, with each team receiving so much for every game played in the tournament. So basically, the more games you win, the more money you receive. Forbes estimates that each victory is worth roughly $256,000. While this sounds like a great system of mediocrity, it's actually heavily skewed in favor of the large schools that play in the big-name conferences. The Big East, for example, which houses traditional powerhouse programs like Connecticut, Georgetown, Syracuse, has been awarded nearly $90 million in March Madness winnings. Compare this to the earnings of Mountain West, which is the home of BYU, San Diego State, UNLV, being awarded less than $20 million total. While the compensation system is by no means unfair, as money is directly tied to performance, it can result in a system in which the rich get richer and the smaller schools have a tougher time closing the gap when recruiting top-level talent. Recruiting top-level talent who can't sell a jersey and get some resources, because they don't make any money, but the schools make money, the coaches make money, the advertisers make money. The NCAA makes money, but the students, the horses that pull the wagon, get carrots. From the first game in Dayton, Ohio, to the national championship in Houston, the cities involved in hosting their respective regional games throughout the tournament expect to see a positive. The cities now. Let me repeat that. This is the cities. From the first game in Dayton, Ohio, to the national championship in Houston, Texas, where I live. The cities involved in hosting their respective regional games throughout the tournament expect to see a positive economic impact from the tournament, with each team bringing in thousands of out-of-town fans to its games. Cities like Denver, Cleveland, and New Orleans expect to see economic impact numbers in the millions. The biggest winner should be Houston. However, we're estimated have direct spending from March Madness fans topping the 100 million mark by creating a weekend festival feel. The host cities do much more than just cash in on the games themselves, as local bars, restaurants, and malls are expecting massive crowds during their host weekends. Hotels especially will be counting on the money signs, as historical occupancy levels have increased 40% during the tournament. Also, some hoteliers have been successful in mandating minimum 3-night stays while increasing rates as well. Vegas wins, your boss loses. Sportsbook experts estimate that roughly $75 million will be wagered in Las Vegas in March Madness. Money lines, spreads, props, basically any bet you would ever want to make. Although Ohio State entered the tournament as number one overall seed, that hasn't stopped Dukies and Jayhawk backers from throwing their hard-earned money behind these two perennial contenders. As if you thought the money floating around in Las Vegas was big, then you're probably not in an office bracket. Estimates place the total dollars amount American office pools in excess of $3 billion. Again, estimates place the total dollar amount of American office pools in excess of $3 billion, with a total cost in lost productivity in the neighborhood of $1.8 billion. That's right. You and your coworkers who made a big fuss about having to pay the coffee that used to be free have no problem throwing 10, 20, even 50 on one of the most unpredictable events on the planet. Not to mention, the boss's wife will probably end up winning again this year, even though she doesn't know what state Morehead State is located in. But you probably didn't either before this past weekend. Anyway, a little bit of information from Yahoo, a little bit of fun. And we'll take a brief pause. We'll be right back with more of the show. We got one. Let me catch this call right quick. I don't know how long you've been there. Hello there, caller. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello. Who am I speaking with?
Miss Paralegal.
Hello, Miss Paralegal. Thank you for joining.
I'm trying to type in the room. It won't let me.
Oh, it won't let you?
As a guest, yes. I can hear you, but I'm unable to speak to you.
Oh, yeah, right. You have to have your tag. I mean, you have to get a name and log in.
I logged in under my name, but it still has me as a guest.
Wow. You know,
I've been having problems with this site for a couple of weeks, so I haven't been able to get on. But nevertheless, I wanted you to know that I am listening and I am supporting you today.
I appreciate it.
Okay, take your break. Have a wonderful day.
No. Well, okay, but you know what? I will talk again. I really appreciate Blog Talk Radio and their help network. They've assisted me already several times, so I'll pass this information along. Again.
Okay.
And I thank you so much. I was getting ready to hit the tag that you did, and I really appreciate it.
Okay.
You know. All right.
All right.
Thank you, and I appreciate you, little lady. We'll talk to you later. You take care. God bless.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Miss Paralegal. I would like to take this time to tell you about a program on Block Talk Radio, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, every Thursday night from 8 to 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, 7 to 8:30 Central Standard Time, and 5 to 6:30 Pacific. Let's talk about the community concerns and political strengths, among so many other topics and issues. Bring your concerns and questions to the table and they'll talk with Ice and Friends every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com. Listen, any concerns or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the host, sponsor of Blog Talk Radio. This message was approved by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
That, of course, was lovely voice, my dear sister, Miss Paralegal. And I think she does a splendid job, absolutely marvelous. I really appreciate her. And, you know, I want to she also has she is a professional announcer and also a singer. Now, she sings, so she is a wonderful lady, and I've been blessed to have met her, and I really appreciate her. Thank you so much, Ms. Paralegal. And we're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back right after this. I want to share this with you. This is some music, again, from my son's group, the group that he's associated with called the Crosswalk Coalition. This particular tune is entitled I'm Free. The last one was With My All. This one is called I'm Free. We'll be right back right after this.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of us children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last.
America is a place where all things are possible. Who your question, the power of our democracy. Tonight is your answer.
Hey, excellent. That was right now. It's about 10 minutes past 8 p.m. Right here on the Next Phase with Ice and Friends. That was music from Crosswalk Coalition from out on the West Coast. And it's a group my son's associated with. Happy birthday to him again. And I want to thank you for joining us right here on the Next Phase with Ice and Friends. We're heard 7 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can give us a call if you choose to at 347-945-7040, 347-945-7040, or you can drop us a line. If you ever have any information that you'd like to have us take a look at and see if we can push it forward for you or assist you with it, and if you want to be on the show to have a discussion about it, we'd be more than happy to have you here. Drop us a note at blakicz.1@gmail.com. blakicz.1@gmail.com. And black is doesn't have a C, and instead of an E, it has a Z and ice. blakicz.1@gmail.com. And I was listening to a show last night, and I happened to catch. I think it was last night. I'm not sure. Maybe last night or the night before. And it was about an issue that's occurring down in Paris, Texas, with a brother who was double amputee, who's going through some serious legal problems with another run-in with this district attorney down there in Paris, Texas. And I didn't get a lot of information. If you happen to hear this show or you happen to know anything about this, I can't think of the individuals who were involved with it. But there's a brother down there that's having a real hard time. Doesn't have any legal representation and I can't even think of the name of the groups that were involved with it. But if you have any information regarding that, drop us a line, BLAKICZ, BLAKICZ, all one word, .1@gmail.com. I'd like to invite them on to have a word to say about the issue that they're dealing with down there. Because, hey, welcome 13457, guest in the chat room. Because this is where I live in Texas, and I understand this place reasonably well. I've been here 59 years, so, and it is, it's, in some instances, it's sad and pathetic and just backwards. You know, that district down there, I think that is, what's been represented by Kay Bailey Hutchison, who, you know, when you have a president of the United States of America, George W. Bush, who had a town, and a guy, John Cornyn, prominent in the Republican Party, not far, probably, 45, maybe 60 minutes from Houston is a town called Vidor, Texas, V-I-D-O-R, where that they still have a I don't know a word that demonic, racist. I mean, I can't say. I don't believe in racism because we're all one race. They have extreme color fetishes, extreme prejudices, where that they, you know, and it's really difficult being an African, a person of African descent, and it's more difficult, you know, when the system attacks you, not just the individuals in the system, and when you have an individual like this guy, this young. Down here, I believe is his name, District Attorney Young, and then you got the Texas State DA Abbott, and then the governor. I want Texas to be blue. That's what I want. That's what I'll be working toward. And if you want to have any information about turning Texas blue, or you want to assist me in that, you know, let's just start seeing if we can turn Texas blue, because this is really sad. It's sad that you would take a double amputee, trump up charges, as I understand it, and try to have him convicted of something that is literally almost impossible for him to have committed, and he just happens to be a person of African descent. So if you have any information about that, or you know anyone who does, let me know about it. You know, I don't know what our listenership is like here on Blog Talk Radio. It's kind of small. We're not a very very large organization, but we do the best we can with what we have at hand, and we will continue to do so until we draw that last breath. Guest 13586. I don't know. Thank you for dropping in. Anyway, we'll be right back. I want you to know again that this is the next phase. No matter what phase you're in, there's always going to be a next phase. This is the next phase with Ice and Friends. And if you're not my enemy, then you're my friend. And feel welcome to give us a call, 347-945-7040. And again, if you listen to us on archive, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back. We want to entertain you a little bit with some of this music. And we'll be right back to close out the show right after this. I think it's, let me see what the time is, 16 past 8 p.m. in Texas, Central Standard Time. And that's like, what, 44 before 9? Pretty warm here. I think it's somewhere around 85, 86 degrees today. Mostly clear skies. Anyway, we'll be right back with more information right after this.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Hey! talk to me about the future of Public Enemy?
Future of Public Enemy got...
Talk about me all the time. They always in my business. Seems I'm about to lose my mind, yeah. And though it seems I'm acting funny, man, excuse me, but don't diss me, cause I'm going through some things, yeah, yeah.
Please excuse me, cause I'm going through some things. I'm going through some changes. My life is rearranged, yeah. Please excuse me, cause I'm
believe he thought he was the best friend that I had,
oh,
yeah. And
yeah.
I hope I don't disturb you, man. Excuse me, but don't diss me, cause I'm going through some things, yeah, yeah.
Please excuse me, cause I'm going through some things. I'm going through some changes. My life is rearranged, yeah. Please excuse me, cause I'm
through some things. 347-945-7040 right here on the next phase with Ice and Friends. Getting ready to do the final, a little bit of the show, and what we want to close out with is this article that we found in the Daily Beast. And this is a dated article. It's been I can't remember what the date. I don't think they have the date here, as a matter of fact. But it's the Beadmakers Refuge for Women. And it's by Eliza Criswold. It says, fed up with rape and epidemic of forced marriages, Rebecca Lalasoli created a village just for women in Kenya. Eliza Criswold on the artisan and activist whose work has reached the fashion world, plus 150 women who shake the world. When Rebecca Lalozzi won her right to divorce this past December, 300 women gathered to celebrate. They roasted a goat in their village, Umoja, which the women founded 21 years ago for women only. No men are allowed in to live here. Our village has turned into a shelter, quote-unquote, Lozzi says. Women and girls fleeing forced marriages and ostracized for being raped are trying to save themselves from female genital mutilation come to Umoja in Kenya for safety. Sons are welcome as long as they are willing to follow the village's rules and do not try to dominate the women. The women form the village in order to protect one another. Now, in addition to being a safe haven and matriarchal utopia, Umoja is a center for thriving artisans community, which centers around beadwork. Their wide, bright necklaces and elaborate headpieces are now de rigueur among folk art fashionistas. Diane von Furstenberg met Lolosoli in 2009. Last year, von Furstenberg introduced the Samburu women's intricate, sophisticated beadwork into her spring collection. In Swahili, Umoja means unity. Many of the 64 women who live there are rape survivors. The perpetrators were often British soldiers who were stationed and trained nearby for more than 50 years. Wearing green uniforms, they blended with the trees, and when women collected firewood, the soldiers would jump out, rape them, laughing like it was a game, Lolosoli said. She herself narrowly escaped attack by British soldiers several decades ago. She doesn't know her exact age, but guesses she's around 48. Once a group of 40 warriors beat the women in front of tourists to try to make it look like the village was corrupt. At first, rape survivors said nothing. When their husbands found out, the women were cast out of their families and villages as a result of the shame of their violation. To survive, some brewed and sold homemade beer, which was illegal, so they went to jail. Others were eaten by hyenas. Finally, more than two decades ago, Lolosoli decided it was time to speak up to on their behalf, no matter the consequences. She started attending community meetings to address this taboo. Yet nothing really happened until people began complaining about other things. Children were blowing up used condoms left by soldiers, for example. No one knew what they were, Lolosoli said. They thought they were some kind of medical apparatus. Charismatic and confident, Lolosoli kept speaking out. Quote, unquote, "We knew it would be dangerous," she says. To silence her, Lolosoli was beaten severely by four men while her husband was traveling. When Lolosoli got out of the hospital and returned to him, he said nothing about the attack. She realized then that she would be killed, that he wouldn't protect her. "We're likely property because we are part of the dowry," she says. Lolosoli nearly died when women held her down and cut her vagina with a razor when she was 15. 3 years later, her husband brought her for 17 cows. A Samburu woman does not have a single right. Anyway, that's a story that was in the Daily Beast about the Bead Makers Refuge for Women by Eliza Griswold. I want to thank you for joining us on the next phase with Ice and Friends. Heard Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. 347-945-7040 is the number to call us if you get a chance. Or you can contact us at blakicz.1@gmail.com. blakicz. .1@gmail.com. Thanks a lot for joining us this week. God bless you, and hope to see you again. 29 past 8 p.m. Thanks for joining us right here on the next phase with Ice and Friends.